about stars. And all my PhD, basically, I spent looking at little maser dots on the sky and how they move, and try to measure kinematics and distances to AGB stars and post-AGB stars. So I'm from Japan. I'm doing my PhD in Japan. I'm not from Japan. And before I start talking about anything, I just want to mention that everything I did and everything I show you, they are not my own results only. I'm not that smart. I needed all these people in the past 4 years to help me to learn the techniques which I'm going to show you. And especially I want to mention Hiroshi Imai, who is going to give a talk on Friday. He's my supervisor in Japan, and he's one of the founding members of Astrometry of Water Fountains. And also I want to mention Daniel Tafoya and Andres Perez Sanchez, because the source I'm going to talk about, I could get the data for it and I could get the questions to answer for it because I met Daniel at STEPS last year. So conferences are good. And also Steve Goldman, he's here. He helped me in some other topics. So yes, conferences are amazing. Everybody shows this picture. I'm just going to mention that what I'm going to talk about post-AGBs and how do stars evolve from AGB to PNE. We've seen talks about these, like the last one. I don't know much about it, so if you have specific evolutionary questions, ask somebody else or me, and I will try to say something. But I'm going to talk about post-AGBs. Fortunately, so I'm doing BLBI and I'm doing maser astrometry. And fortunately for us, there is a very, very small, tiny subclass of post-AGBs called water fountains, which show these, which the previous, like the Sahai, the Hubble image by Sahai is the, I forgot the name, that very beautiful bipolar post-AGB star, that's also a water fountain, I think. And what makes these special is that they have water masers tracing these bipolar structures, so we can use VLBI astrometry to measure the kinematics of these outflows. And it's very important that VLBI measurements are the only direct way to somehow quantify how fast these jets are moving and quantify the mass and quantify physical parameters and measure the distance, for example, to the star. And they are very important for models. So water fountains, very simple. This was the first detection by Hiroshi Imai in 2002. You see the central source, which is obscured, of course. You see some OH masers around it in some spherically expanding shell. And you see these very, very fast bipolar water masers. And they trace these jets. And then in Water Flemings in 2006 published another paper which explained that these outflows are collimated by magnetic fields. And how you basically determine what's a water fountain is that you look at the velocity spectra, and then if you see water masers faster than OH masers, then you can think it's a water fountain, but then you need VLBI measurements to map the source to actually say it's a water fountain, and then it's still very difficult to distinguish whether it's a star-forming region or a post-AGB star. So everybody knows more about this. This is for me. This is the map, the little schematic view of water fountains and post-AGBs, which I've been building for myself for the past year to try to understand the different questions we want to answer. And the two main things are, like, for me at least, how are jets produced? How are masers produced in the jets? And what launches these jets? And we've heard talks about it, and there are many things, binaries, magnetic fields, accretion disks, etc., which we think play a role in these bipolar structures. There have also been models explaining how water masers evolve from these spherical AGB stars to these bipolar or multipolar planetary nebulae. The problem with these evolutionary models is that there are very few sources, and so you can build these very beautiful things like timelines how water masers are produced around the star, how they get accelerated, how they get destroyed, etc. But there are just not enough sources to say that this is correct or not. And I think we are finding out that this is not entirely true. But I'm only going to talk about Waterfront is now and only one source. And these are the other sources I'm involved in somehow. So astrometry in itself is not, it's just a supporting technique or science. So I'm not trying to answer the physics behind these sources. I'm just helping people to do the measurements and collaborate with them. And then they are smarter and they can answer these questions. So as I said, there are very few water fountains up to date which have been confirmed by interferometric measurements. And what I'm going to talk about is IRES 18043 and how VLBI measurements might help us a little bit. So the whole the history of the source is that Daniel Tafoya published a paper in 2014 saying that he detected high-frequency water masers, high-frequency components in a spectra, and he claimed that these are high-velocity water masers which are produced in the same region as the normal low-velocity 22 gigahertz water masers. And also, they mapped the source with ATCA. It's going to be published by Perez Sanchez this year, hopefully. And they see with the low resolution ATCA measurements, they can already see a bipolar structure. The star is probably somewhere here. This is the velocities. This is the red shifted part. This is the blue shifted part, and it's probably in the line of sight. And the other important thing is that these are the 22 gigahertz water masers. This is the one measured by Daniel, and the intensity ratio is around unity. That's going to be important. So the model put forward by him says that in order to explain the intensity ratio of one between low and high frequency water masers is that if we suppose that there's an outflow bumping into this slowly expanding circumstellar envelope that shocks low frequency masers into existence, then there's a region where these masers are produced, but this does not explain why we also see so intense high frequency masers. So what he said, what happens if there are multiple ejections shocking the same region? So the second, if there's a second jet shocking the same region again, then it doesn't destroy the molecules anymore as the first did, but it just raises the temperature. The energy goes into raising the temperature, and it creates a better region for measuring these high frequency water molecules. And what we did, so his assumptions are based on two things: that you need a collimated episodic outflow, and also you need some shock front. So how can VLBI measurements help us by doing these things? So what we did is we took the VLBA, American VLBI network, and we took archival data and we reduced it. And what we can see is that there are these beautiful arc-shaped structures. These are milliarcsecond resolution images or like maps. And you can see these very beautiful arc-shaped structures in the blue shifted lobe. Like this is the ATCA image and the red shifted lobe. What I want to mention here is that when you actually reuse these data and you map the masers are clouds in space and they have a velocity structure. So it's never like so simple with just nice unresolved intensity peak, but you actually see them resolved in velocity. And you see several milliarcsecond sized structures and you somehow have to figure out where's the actual maser cloud, the maser feature, and that can be hard between several epochs. So using these measurements, we can say how fast the jet is moving. We can say when the jet was ejected. These are very young structures, only probably less than 30 years old. We can say the 3D expansion velocity, and we can say the inclination angle. So we can characterize the spatial and kinematic structure of this source. Then the next thing we did is that me and my friend, we found these two papers which described a ballistic Bouchard model in star-forming regions. So I couldn't find, or we found this. So these are models and hydro simulations for star-forming regions. And surprisingly, I could fit these to my model. I had to change the velocity of the jet, of course. But as you can see, the points are the proper motions in the longitudinal and the transverse profiles, and the lines are the different components of the model. And it's just a very, very simple model. So there's a jet pummeling into the circumstellar envelope. It sweeps up material, and these different profiles trace the different parts of this shocked region. And you can see that you get a pretty good agreement, and we only wanted to say whether this is a shock front or not. And there are some outliers, but they can be explained by errors in the astrometry. So it's not serious. What I want to point out now is that, so I don't know if anybody else does astrometry here, or anybody else seen masers. The thing is that star-forming regions and post-AGB water fountains, they are really similar, and the same models can be used to explain the structures seen around young stars and old stars as well. This is something that I was fascinated by. Of course, the launching mechanism might be different, but once the jets are launched, we see the same kind of structures in both cases. And finally, there's another thing that supports these high-frequency water measures and also these observations. Another thing these observations support is that there are two competing scenarios how these water fountains actually shape their surroundings. And the traditional model was that there are these very tightly collimated jets which precess, and they, as they go into the circumstellar material, that's why we see like arc-shaped structures of water masers. But then we found these kind of structures which cannot be explained by a single or even two precessing jets, but they can be explained by the scenario put forward by Daniel or other people, that if you have several collimated outflows shocking the same region, then you can have these cavities inside the circumstellar envelope, and then the walls of the cavities are, there's a density enhancement, and jets can shock again and again, and you see these masers arise in this bow-shocked region. And this is one thing that I cannot explain so far in my observations, and it supports that these are episodic events, is that if you look at all the six epochs available by the VLBA, then you see that this is the profile which traces the U-shape, which I've shown you. And it's very stable for the first three epochs. So for half a year, it's very, very stable. But in the fourth epoch, it disappears. The masers disappear. And then in the fifth epoch, 1 month later or so, maser bursts at the same region where we see the stable U-shaped structure before. But it also accelerates by 40 kilometers per second. And then in the last epoch, which we have data for, the maser starts spreading out in velocity. So it starts slowing down, it starts expanding in velocity, but it's still only one maser feature in this structure. If anybody has some idea about this, it would be really great, but this also suggests maybe an episodic scenario. So how did these observations help us? I've been a bit fast, is that they show us that there is indeed a collimated outflow around this star. There is indeed a shocked surface which is required by the model to produce high frequency water masers, and we might be seeing episodic events. And the good news is that yesterday I got news that our ALMA proposal was accepted as a grade C. So we might actually have data soon on these high frequency water masers with ALMA, and by mapping them we can distinguish between whether they arise in the same region as low frequency or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gabor. Again, quite good timing, so we have again time for a few questions.
Okay.
Is William?
Yes, very interesting talk. You mentioned the launching mechanisms. If you compare young stars with old stars, you said
yes.
The launching mechanisms could be different. I was wondering about the magnetic fields that Wouter Fleming suggested for the collimation. Is the magnetic field then stellar, or is it in the disk?
Like in star-forming regions, or what?
No, for the water fountain that Wouter Fleming published in 2006, you mentioned that the magnetic field is probably the agent that causes
that
the collimation.
Yes.
I was wondering the origin of this magnetic field. Is it stellar, or is it in the disk, or where does the magnetic field come from?
I have no idea. Okay. I think he gives talks about this all the time, that he doesn't know either, but I mean, there are people here who know Wouter and his work much better. So, anybody can help answer this or no?
It has to be stellar. In fact, there are some models that propose that a magnetic field anchored to the core of the star can launch these magnetic fields. I mean, they can survive the whole evolution of the star, even though through high mass loss rates and things like that.
These sources do have disks or not?
Disks have been observed by Buharaba, right, and the new ALMA observations, but not in water fountain cases, not yet. There haven't been any ALMA observations yet of these sources. So
the disks are very different from the protoplanetary stars. They are completely different in the sense that they are much bigger. I mean, they are circumbinary in general, the ones that have been detected. So yes. The sizes are very big. So it's not the same mechanism at all. Cannot be.
No, it's not the same, but once the disk is formed, then the result is the same. So probably the disk are, of course, binary or just, yeah, so.
The collimation cannot come from the disk, because the disk is very...
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a good point, I think. Any other questions? No? Let's thank Gabor again for his nice talk.